Okay, thank you very much. First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to discuss spin hole effect. These are the collaborators, assistant professor of my group, Dr. Ito, and a graduate student, Kato Ishikawa, and Garrett sitting here over there, and Lawrence from University of. So let me start with a short, quick introduction of spintronics. The spintronics aims electrical or optical control of spin in materials and magnetic control of current in nanoscale magnets. We are mainly interested in transport-related spintronics. For example, magnetic resistance is a control of current by magnetic field. AMR, which is anisotropic magnetic resistance. Here, the resistivity depends on the direction of the magnetization, and giant and tunneling magnetic resistance, and ballistic magnetic resistance in point contact, etc. And I think this Hall effect, anomalous Hall effect, belongs to this category. And as for the electrical control of spins, the current-induced magnetization switching and current-induced domain log motion, and also the spin accumulation and spin Hall effect belong to this category. I skip this part and come to the problem caused by spin-orbit interaction. The spin-orbit interaction gives rise to a coupling of spin with orbital motion, and therefore we have several interesting transport phenomena, anomalous Hall effect, anisotropic magnetic resistance, and spin Hall effect. Now, let me define some words, extrinsic and intrinsic. Extrinsic means impurities produces random potential as well as the spin-orbit interaction. On the other hand, the intrinsic means uniform spin-orbit interaction exists in the material from the beginning, and the spin-orbit interaction is taken into account the energy eigenstate of the system. So we can add ballistic transport of the anomalous Hall effect and the spin Hall effect, which are called intrinsic, anomalous Hall effect and spin Hall effect. Our issue is as follows. We would like to study the effect of disorder on the intrinsic anomalous Hall effect, spin Hall effect, and anisotropic magnetic resistance. To do this, we adopt a 2-DEG with Rushbaugh-type spin-orbit interaction with a random potential.
Can we interrupt?
Yes. Gorgeous.
Yeah.
But that means you get more than
I'm surprised. What is intrinsic AMR? I mean, if there was no disorder, you would have infinite.
Now, I would like to add this point later. Okay. Yeah, I think nobody argued the intrinsic and anomalous AMR before, because mainly AMR appears in the transient metal and alloys. So usually the spin orbit interaction appears due to impurity potential.
No, but the AMR appears, it is
in
due to the spin-orbit structure.
Pardon?
The AMR would be due to the spin-orbit coupled structure, electronic structure directly, not the impurity. The AMR does not come from the scattering from impurity.
Okay. Impurity and...
Well, but
it's actually the velocity time and isotropy more than, let's say, an isotropy of the group velocity. But what I'm saying is if you had no disorder, you have finite Hall effect. Right, but
you
have infinitely large
conductors. If there's not, right.
There's no disorder, the term intrinsic AMR is kind of...
Okay, let me discuss later.
not spin orbit coupling material, but
okay, this is outline of my talk. I quickly finished this whole effect in 2 days, right? Okay, and I will show our results. So this is a history of a whole effect. The whole effects have a long history: the ordinary whole effect, and anomalous whole effect, and integer and fractional quantum whole effect. And as for the anomalous Hall effect, there was a big controversy on the origin of this phenomenon, intrinsic versus extrinsic origins. And as for the spin Hall effect, we may define the spin Hall effect as non-zero spin resolved Hall current in non-magnet with zero external magnetic field. The spin Hall effect has been predicted at the beginning as an extrinsic one, and later the intrinsic spin Hall effect has been found for p-type semiconductors and to DEG with Rashid-type spin orbit interaction. And the spin of 2-deg, we cannot, I need not say anything about this 2-deg. The Hamiltonian is quite simple, as shown here. This is the electronic state. Right. So now let me explain how to calculate the transport in the diffusive regime. In order to do this, we adopt following Hamiltonian. H node is the Rashid type Hamiltonian, and V impurity is delta function type isotropic potential, and we calculate the conductivity using this type of formula. Now here the average indicates the average over impurity distributions. So if we rewrite this expression something like this, using this is average of product of the Green's function, and if we rewrite this one like product of averaged Green's function, there should be some corrections, so which is called vertex corrections, and this vertex correction should be consistently with the safe energy here, sigma. Okay, so usually in a free electron model, because this impurity potential is isotropic, this vertex correction vanishes identically. However, if there is a spin orbit interaction, this is not self-evident, this vanishing of vertex correction is not self-evident. Okay, so we come to the result. We first, this is our approximation, the simplest one, Born and Ladder approximation, Born approximation for the self-energy and Ladder approximation for the conductivity. We adopt this simple relation to perform the momentum integrations to get the final expression. And this is the result for the longitudinal conductivity, and this one is the Drude part, and this is a correction due to spin orbit interaction. Lambda is the constant spin orbit interaction. Okay. And this result can be confirmed by the numerical simulation shown here. This is the conductivity and as function of spin orbit interaction, and this conductivity changes lambda square, and this curvature quite agree with this coefficient. Okay, and we also find the spin hole conductivity vanishes because the non-vertex part is cancelled by the vertex part. Okay, the simple explanation of the spin hall effect is has been given by Hilo before. Essentially, the tilting of spin appears under the presence of electric field, and this tilting depends on the direction of ky. So this causes the spin hall effect. The simplest explanation of the vanishing of the spin hall conductivity by scattering can be interpreted as scrambling of the spin precession. However, we should be careful about this simple explanation because this vertex corrections depend on the type of spin orbit interactions. Okay, I skipped this part. And now we would like to argue the anomalous Hall effect and anisotropic magnet resistance. So far we have shown that the spin Hall effect vanishes for 2 days when we introduce entropy scattering. And how will be this anisotropic Hall effect and anisotropic magnet resistance? These are our main issue, and we are also interested in there are any condition which give a non-zero spin Hall effect. Okay, we always use this expression for the conductivity. Okay, and now we show here the result. In order to calculate anomalous Hall effect, we adopt this type of Hamiltonian, and this is a Rashba Hamiltonian with exchange splitting of the band plus impurity potential. Okay, here we adopt we calculate the conductivity in Pauli-spin space up to the second order of the spin orbit interaction. The general expression of the anomalous Hall conductivity is complicated, so I skip it, but here I show only the simplified result, assuming these relations. The extent splitting is much larger than the safe energy, and spin-dependent lifetime is expressed using by this constant delta. So this is a result of the spin Hall anomalous Hall conductivity. This part is the coefficients which appeared before in the longitudinal conductivity, which proportional to lambda square. And there are some constant here. This is the safe energy. The spin dependence is neglected here. But this whole expression is proportional to delta square. And this is the only spin dependence in this expression. So we find that this anomalous whole conductivity vanishes unless there is if there is no spin dependence in the lifetime. Okay, in this case, the magnetization is perpendicular to the plane. Okay. When we look at this expression, here is a lifetime tau here, and this is the safe energy. So there's a product of lifetime and safe energy, and the safe energy is basically the inverse of the lifetime. So in principle, there is no lifetime in this expression. So this is quite similar to the situation of side jump mechanism argued before. So we may conclude from this result that there is a similarity between intrinsic anomalous Hall effect and spin Hall effect. Okay, and also this expression is quite similar to the side jump mechanism. We cannot argue the skew scattering mechanism because we have not introduced any spin orbit interaction caused by the impurity. Okay, how is the condition for non-zero spin Hall effect? In order to argue this condition, we have introduced two types of impurity potential. One is magnetic, and the other is non-magnetic. And here, we have chosen this type interaction because S dot S, S small s is the spin of conduction electrons, and larger S indicate the spins of localized impurities. So this is isotropic. So I think this is quite suitable to add the magnetic effect on the spin spin Hall effect. This is the expression of the spin Hall conductivity. Lambda is the original spin orbit interaction, and lambda prime is the effective spin orbit interaction caused by the vertex corrections. And when this when there is no magnetic impurities, this lambda prime is given by this expression. So we find this spin Hall conductivity is finite. However, if there is no magnetic impurity, this lambda prime plus lambda equals zero identically, and then this one vanishes as explained before. So far, unfortunately, I have no intuitive explanation of this finite result of this spin Hall conductivity. But this difference between here and here comes from some phase appearing in this potential. Here, in this case, the potential is diagonal in spin space. However, in magnetic case, for example, z direction, sigma z, has a sign minus here. This is the main result of this difference. So we can say if there is a suitable magnetic impurities, we may find non-zero spin Hall conductivity. Okay. So now this is a result of intrinsic anomalous anisotropic magnet resistance. The Hamiltonian is the same as before, but the magnetization is in plane. If the magnetization is along the current direction, the conductivity is defined sigma parallel. And when the magnetization is perpendicular to the current direction, the conductivity is defined as sigma perpendicular. This is a result of sigma parallel and sigma perpendicular. Right? So the coefficient is again in the same with the correction to the longitudinal conductivity. And however, there appears another term in this bracket. And we find that the sigma parallel, I mean sigma perpendicular, is larger than the sigma parallel. So we find there is intrinsic anisotropic magnet resistance. So we need here the spin orbit interaction, of course. However, we also need impurities to get a finite conductivity. And so I think interesting point that we can get anisotropic magnet resistance without any 3D orbitals. Usually,
both
longitudinal.
As well as transfer, you have only types of the transverse conductivity.
longitudinal conductivity.
Before this, you
are only talking about the transverse conductivity. Yes, the transverse conductivity, there is no distance. Only one. This one, through the class, this one, is the simplest case of
it.
Previous one is that there's no exchange, exchange splitting of the band. Here we introduced exchange splitting, you know, the delta EX exchange. So here's the magnetic case, and the first one is a non-magnetic case.
So we still have the same force in orbit coupling?
Same, yes, yes.
And you only change the direction of the integration of impurities or external field or?
Magnetization of impurities. Impurity basically is non-magnetic in this case.
So you change the direction of
the
change field, or?
Yes, and then conductivity changes. Okay, usually the anisotropic magnetic resistance in transition metals and alloys, this is a data of resistivity change over averaged resistivity, and it depends on the number of carriers. And the explanation is given as follows. This type of anisotropic magnetic resistance comes from the transition from S state, conduction S state, to the 3D state. Because the 3D orbital is anisotropic, this kind of anisotropy appears. So in our case, there's no anisotropy in the orbital. However, we get anisotropic magnetic resistance. Okay, these are our main results. So this is some numerical simulation on the anisotropic magnetic resistance, but I skip this one. And I skip these old experimental results. And here I've written down some issues, remaining issues. However, I think Hiro or other guy will mention on this point. No, another time you
come. It sounds nice.
Okay, this is a summary of my talk. We have calculated intrinsic anisotropic Hall effect, spin Hall effect, and anomalous Hall effect, and anisotropic magnetic resistance in the diffusive regime. And main result is that the intrinsic anomalous Hall effect is quite similar to the spin Hall effect. And we also found that there exists intrinsic anisotropic magnetic resistance. And I hope this study will be helpful to get a unified picture of Hall effect. So that's all my talk. Thank you very much.
Expressions.
Yes.
So you're assuming a k-independent lifetime.
K, right.
So all what's the only origin in your case is let's say an isotropic group velocity. If I would sort of translate it into the second logical
opinion.
Right.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
And how big is it? The effect of the
rush? How gosh, Patan?
Well, what's the magnitude of your
AMR
you get?
I mean, magnitude is quite small, I think, in this expression.
Why? Is it 1%, 0.1%, 0.01%?
It depends on parameters, of course, but if we use some rather large value of spin orbit interactions, the change of difference between these resistivities, say 1%, 2%, something, in the numerical simulation.
Simulation,
you
can really look also at the ballistic AMR.
Right, right. Yes.
How large is
that? Yeah, my student have the figures, but I have no figures at present.
So these experiments have been carried out, of course, on these systems by Dan Martha.
He
can talk about it.
Thank you. Okay, I'll check that one.
Intrinsic AMR means that
it
also
uses
a wave function?
Wave function?
What do you mean by intrinsic
AMR? Intrinsic means that this spin orbit interaction exists uniformly from the beginning in the materials, not introduced by intuitive.
So you mean that you can identify that which is free from the lifetime, but.
Maybe you want to say something about the possible experiments?
Possible. Possible experiment. Well.
Well, the Russian thing is not magnetic.
Right. Oops. Yeah, one is some gold on a resistive field magnet. And in this case, because of this magnetic field from field magnet, the gold may magnetize. And the gold has a strong, large spin orbit interaction. So it may be possible to find something. And also, there are a ripple that the gold cluster can be ferromagnetic. you wonder? I mean, I don't know.
Remember that the American telluride angle, I mean, they're not Russia type, right?
Yeah, no, no.
Telluride is an
interface. Yeah, but Roland said that this mercury telluride has a large defactor.
Yeah, yeah, the actual thing, I mean, the first trial you can do in Russia,
It is more
of a cubic dispersion. Mm-hmm.
I should check that. It depends on the it related to the question by Bauer. I mean, the ballistic small nano system, we can observe some magnet resistance without any impurities. So in our case, the sample is infinite. In our case, if we are dealing with infinite systems, so right, yeah, no, we have numerically we can check that there is a ballistic magnet resistance or not, but in our numerical simulation is rather infinite systems because we tend some limit.
But it will not be so difficult.
Right, of course.
Calculate in an adiabatic type of information what the ballistic AMR would be across
our wires,
right?
Yeah, I agree with that, yes.
So maybe a comment to the experiment. I mean, there obviously are experiments in P-type galleries, and there are some of each, right? In the Bayless panel, there's a very strong AMR. And if you analyze that with this sort of intrinsic AMR, you see that the anisotropy and the group velocity, so it's really the anisotropy coming directly from the band structure, that cannot explain the experiment. And if you want to explain the experiment, you have to also add anisotropy in the lifetime, and it's k-dependent lifetime. And anisotropy in the lifetime is the one that seems to dominate AMR in this particular case, so I think it might also apply to the rational.
Spin-hole effect, I think the arguments are now so general that the nature of the lifetime does not seem to be very important advantages anyway.
But this is very different. I mean, for the long signal transfer.
I think this is quite related. I mean, to say that the anomalous hole effect sort of is detects sort of your
generating spin-hole current, right?
And there is no spin-hole current, so there's also not an anomalous hole effect. So if the spin-hole current is not there, or for very general impurity, then I would expect that the nature of the impurity will also be quite different.
This is one more
thing. I think that the whole system is completely different.
I don't think that's a but there is a little difference of effect from the spin or charge, though. I mean, that's the subtlety, I think, that we have to be careful about.
Perhaps a resistance. Where does the word AMR comes from?
It's anomalous.
This is just usual mesoscopic physics and magnetic field dependence of conductors and conductor fluctuations.
No, this is
quantum dots.
No, it's not magnetic field, it's magnetization. Or orientation of the ferromagnetic material magnetization. It's not of the external magnetic field.
Yeah.
AMR means dependence of resistance of the orientation of magnetization in the ferromagnet with respect to primary or crystallized.
I'll ask him about the small device.
Well, that's the same.
No, I would answer it differently. I guess there's basically not so much different, but you have a very strong magnetic field, which sort of does not work on the orbit, but only on the spin, and the extension.
But the
point is more essential than what we have here. Really on Boltzmann, but on top of this you get all this mesoscopic stuff over Boltzmann. That's not what we're talking about.
Okay, so the spirit of my talk, which Garrett got me to do unwillingly.
We are still one in time, so you might
a little bit over time. Great. No, actually, yeah. I'm going to keep it very informal because it's more of an open discussion that we all have together, that we brought together. So I will only make this public unless the people that are involved in the discussion agree as well. So anyway, so far, let's just go on. So this is anomalous, follow-up on Junikir's talk, anomalous jumps to spin-orbit coupled systems. But this is my point of view, again, through the collaboration of many people here. I try to find as many pictures as possible. Some of them are pretty good. But anyway, that's just that. So, I any comments that I make that are wrong are not due to these people, are due to me. So let me give a quick introduction, half an hour. It's going to be rather fast and a little bit specialized to addressing a few points that we've talked about, that Junikir just mentioned, okay? So I forgive me for being too to the point. But the first part is going to be more normal, I would say. We'll just talk about intro, the way I view the parsing of the parsing, meaning piecing apart the anomalous Hall effect and the spin-hole effect. And some of the things of the resolution of the controversy in the same spirit as we have this workshop as well and this discussion, where we as a community, which is a pleasure to work on, because we're willing to discuss with each other openly and find a final resolution happily. And then this is where the meat starts, where I'm going to go very much into detail. So this part is going to be where you can snooze if you're not interested, or where we talk about the Lyotard diagrams, how they're calculated, some of the issues that we're going to be discussing this week. Also, some of the issues that we're going to discuss with Donna today as well. And I wanted to mainly express my point of view that maybe she can address in her talk or later. And this is why I don't want this to be too public either way. And if I have any time, I'll say one of the successful stories where I think of some of these ladder diagrams in the graphene, where we've been able to do this both in the semi-classical and in the diagrammatic point of view. So anomalous Hall effect, we've all now seen this 1500 times, so let me skip that. You just have this, the typical picture. You have this in the ferromagnetic, you have this spin ups and spin downs that scatter asymmetrically, creating then a charge imbalance across the sample because there's a charge imbalance of the spin population. And that gives you this anomalous Hall effect signal. The story is very controversial. It starts in 1980 with Mr. Hall describing the Hall effect, then 1 year later, anomalous Hall effect. Since then, it's still not understood, but it's used often because it's used to actually measure magnetization in many cases. Actually, where's the little... Oh, this is it. Okay, there you go. But it took quite a long time to actually make a first quantitative analysis of it by Karplus and Luttinger. Smith introduced this idea of skew scattering. This actual picture that I just showed you earlier, that's skew scattering. But this one was coming mainly from the spin-orbit coupling of the electronic structure. Then Kohn and Luttinger generalized their theory to include the skew scattering as well, and Berger introduced the idea of side jump. And it's really in the 70s and 80s that the whole mess and controversial started, with Smit and Berger really going at it very strongly. This, by the way, I've taken by from a talk by Patrick Bruno, so this is not my original slide. I'd like to thank him for that.
Music?
No music today. Whatever. Anyway, that was very interesting. It's actually a sociological study. If you actually look at this, it's really nasty how they go at each other, which is not how we do it here. And then it was really in the early 2000 that this idea started to generate some more interest, because more and more materials with the strongest spin-orbit coupling come into play, ferromagnetic systems. And we started looking again, just as the Kugel formula, at this bubble, which actually this is the intrinsic contribution, what is usually known as intrinsic contribution of the orthogonal response. This is just simply here writing the Kugel formula, which can be written in a semi-cap classical version, introducing this anomalous velocity with this Berry's phase connection, Berry's phase for the block states that are spin orbit coupled. Once you write it this way, you can immediately say that this is my off-diagonal conductivity. These two expressions are actually identical, so there's no difference between those two. And these have been done and introduced in this type of papers in here. And why it was not totally satisfactory, because in this case we're actually doing this as saying, well, let me just calculate that contribution and compare to experiment. There may be others, but I don't care. Let me just do it and see if it makes any sense. And the thing is that it has been extremely successful in many, many instances. One of our most successful ones is in the Luna magnetic semiconductor systems that I mentioned in a previous talk, by the theory of Youngworth, New, and Alan MacDonald, Thomas Youngworth, and other as well. The list is long, but it's still not a very satisfactory business, because of the fact, from a theory point of view, we're ignoring other things that could be important as well. You know, all the diagrams due to disorder, scattering, etc. But the success was there, and that was the motivation. So let me go back to say, okay, how do we deal with anomalous Hall effect, linear response Kugel formalism? Let me take that approach, and we truly need to have several approaches agreeing with each other that are actually equivalent. If you look at Kelder's formalism and Kugel perturbation theory in linear response, should be identical, and that's the problem, that so far they haven't. Even within Kugel, there's no agreement. So you have the Kubo, the whole conductivity. This is just the same expression as I wrote earlier in it. This is the alpha and beta, the exact eigenstates of the disorder system. And you have to take the limits correspondingly. And the way we do perturbation theory with in diagrammatic sense, you start, okay, you say, okay, my real eigenstates are going to be the block eigenstates, which are the clean ones, plus the scattering from the impurities. And then we learned that, okay, from every cross that we have, we're going to have an inverse tau contribution, where this tau is the lifetime introduced by this scattering, that these guys have a finite lifetime, unlike these guys, which are infinite lifetime. So this tau comes from there. And whenever I have two counterpropagating lines of the same band, I'm going to put a tau in it. That's the when I do the averaging over states. So when you look at the diagonal conductivity, so it's diagonal or off-diagonal, then we do know how to do this quite easily. This can have, you know, you will have done this calculation many times. Here, just from before, okay, I have a two counterpropagating lines. That's going to give me a tau term. So it's not surprising that the conductivity is proportional to tau. But also you're going to start thinking, okay, what are my other diagrams that give me some same order type? Well, this one is one of them, because you have a 1 over tau And these two lines, two pairs of lines, give you a tau each. So that's going to give you the same order contribution as this one. And this one is the one that we know that gives us the minus cos theta term, okay, which actually comes very naturally from the Boltzmann transport equations. This one you have to do a little more work to get to it, but truly, you know, this is a little more systematic maybe, okay. And then you go to anomalous Hall conductivity, and then you ask yourself, well, what is the diagrams that you have? So in this case, these diagrams are going to be this Q scattering one, intensely, that now, because in the second bound approximation, the scattering from K to P is not the same as from P to K. Okay, that's the type of skewness that this mod scattering that is actually, I didn't know this until the Physics Today article, that actually is used to polarize electrons in these colliders. This other one in here, now here you're not going to have a tau because these are different band indices, but this is actually independent of tau, this contribution when you have a spinoid coupling. And this one as well, you don't, you know, in principle, it's going to be of the same order as that one. But typically, what we earlier, the earlier theories of the 2000 and the ones that we actually, how we actually got into this business of this intrinsic spin-all effect and all that, is from the intuition that we use this to analyze very complicated materials like the magnetic semiconductors and found a lot of success, a very non-trivial success. I mean, as a function of many parameters, making lots of agreement. And now this is the debate of how we deal with these other parts as well. Here's the breakup of what this actually means. This is just simply the anomalous Hall effect. You have this, the occupation response type of physics, which is the skew scattering, the picture that I showed you earlier in the caricature. And this interband coherence response, which is of the order of tau to the zero, which is between this Berry's phase contribution and this side jump, what is believed to be some side jump. And there is still a debate, and this is the reason why we're here today, and Unicoro came, and we're going to try to discuss this. For example, what Unicoro mentioned earlier, the anomalous Hall effect, rasp persistence with disorder, these are five, actually I guess this could be just one, works that actually use equivalent or the same techniques, with all of them giving different answers. So hopefully by the time of this week, I predict that we're all going to agree. But this is complicated stuff. It's somewhat embarrassing. One would think, okay, non-interacting electrons, linear response, you should know how to do this. It's not that easy, because these are all very good people and know how to do this. The only sample that I know where two approaches, like the semi-classical and the Kubo agree, is this work by Senitsyn et al, where we worked on graphene. But if I have time, I'll show you the results, okay? Then we go back to the spin Hall effect, just to mention a couple of things. I probably skipped through that. How am I doing? Oh my lord. Okay, so never mind. Spin Hall effect, we've all seen it. The story is, you know, started Diakonoff and Perel, and it was completely forgotten. And then Hirsch introduced it again. Then we came back from our analysis. I mean, the reason why we actually thought of the intrinsic spin Hall effect, as I have hopefully convinced you now, it was from our work of anomalous Hall effect. Introducing the intrinsic anomalous Hall effect, we realized, okay, wait a minute. If in strong spin orbit coupled systems, where this spin orbit coupling is in the electronic structure, you do have this anomalous Hall effect intrinsically. You expect this intrinsic spin Hall effect to be there as well. And that was the introduction of this idea. This is when we found out that, wait a minute, you know, some Russians have done it, some thought about the spin Hall effect also a long time ago. It culminated in the observation 2 years ago. And of course, lots of controversy, as you can see, as you have noticed, well, there's many papers since then. The origin of it, the parallelism, the parallel between the controversy of the spin Hall effect and anomalous Hall effect, I expected it, and of course it came true. But then now I'm happy to say that the ratio of experiments here that we were wondering that whether we would have them or not is coming down. There's actually quite a few more experiments, and actually there's one more that I'm aware of that I'm not allowed to tell about from a group in Hong Kong. Anyway, so there's lots of things happening, but then you can come back to the same type of diagram and analysis and ask yourself, okay, the same type of partition of the spin Hall effect, and this is where the parallelism really comes in. And I agree completely with Unicoro that, am I mispronouncing completely your name?
okay.
It's okay. I think I've pronounced it 5 different ways today. Sorry about that. I don't know, a major jet lag, you know, I just came from Pisa and I left 2 days ago. So essentially, you know, you do have the same type of contributions, and the difference in here is a paramagnetic systems, and you want to understand the and this is spin instead of charge, and of course charge is conserved, spin is not, so you have to deal with things a little more difficult to deal with them. We introduced this idea of the intrinsic spin Hall effect. The idea itself, Murakami and us, it was the same. Simply, we just chose two different examples. David looked at hold-up 3D systems. We looked at the Rajpa, thinking that that was the simpler guy, which of course it turned out not to be. But anyway, that's the Rajpa. You've seen this Hamiltonian. You need the broken inversion symmetry, and this gives this nice and simple spin-orbit coupling that aligns your spins perpendicular to the momentum of the electrons. And once you did this calculation, you said, oh, how cute, you get E over 8 pi. And whenever both bands are occupied, when the one of that band is occupied, it goes linearly to zero, which many people forget. But of course, immediately you can ask yourself, well, that's only one bubble, that's this one over here. You know, you just simply introduce it from the parallelism of the anomalous Hall effect that you studied earlier. You know, what about the other terms? What about the other contributions? Here, it's always understood, and there's not much controversy in the skew scattering whether it's there or not. That's really not the controversy. It's really on this part, on understanding this part, that is very non-trivial, because this comes from the disorder, from the deceleration, essentially the thing that creates a steady state, but also seems to be independent of the scattering as well. And this was pointed out, as Junicuri did, the first one, to point out that, okay, once you add those two in the Rajpa system, you actually get zero, okay, in the latter diagram. So is the spin Hall effect zero? Is it a bunch of baloney or something? So that was the controversy, and there has been a lot of controversy. There's a lot of questions in the community when you say spin Hall effect, unless you are in this community, studying this very fast-moving thing. They'll say, oh, you know, nobody understands anything. Well, not truly anymore. There's actually things that we do understand. If we were wondering before, about a year and a half ago, does the spin Hall effect vanish? Does the spin Hall effect conductivity vanish? In general, or it was only for the Rajpa case, etc. Is it dissipationally versus dissipative? Is it non-zero in a mesoscopic regime? And this was captured very much by Shankar, saying that the theoretical situation was a complete mess at the time when he was talked about. This article mentioned the two experiments that observed it. But this is a community that I'm happy to say is willing to work together. We actually got together in the same spirit as we're getting together today, to discuss together all these people that got together in Korea, on the other side of the world. We are actually competing with each other a little bit and also having different points of view. And the idea was to get together and, you know, whoever is standing at the end of the day wins and writes their review. No, actually, more. We did make some nice conclusions after lots of discussions, and of course the idea was that you know, we were all at the same level on the floor, you know, and then sometimes I was praying, please let it be okay. So this is the pictures that you like to show. But we agree with some things, like some semantics, as in order to keep, there's a lot of confusion when one says intrinsic, everybody wants to introduce a new term. Sometimes that's not very advisable, because then you just create more and more confusion. It's better to stick to one type. You can read these conclusions here. I'm not going to go into the detail. It just simply, we recognize, as Junicuri has mentioned, that this vanishing of the spin Hall effect in Rajpa system is very peculiar to the Rajpa system. Only happens in that system where you have linear spin orbit coupling. But you can read this here. It's called, this is the review of the workshop, spin Hall effect. Back to the beginning at a higher level, this was stolen from one of our organizers here, Garrett Bauer, in his summary talk that I also muscled him into giving. And then now let me go back, actually not here, I'm actually at this point, talk about now details. Okay, in the last 10 minutes, do I have, Lord Almighty? Okay, so following this spirit, let's talk about these results of the Rajpa, anomalous Hall effect in Rajpa systems, how to do the calculations, and I'm making a prediction. At the end of the week, we're all going to agree. Okay? hopefully I'll be happy to report. So the single, okay, never mind, what the heck happened here? Hang on. Okay, forget about that one. Okay, let me go to this one. Ladder diagrams for a general 2D RASPA system. You can write the Hamiltonian fairly general in two dimensions. You just have this effective magnetic field that gives you, you just have the condition that the BIK is equal to minus BI minus K in order to obtain a still time reverse symmetry, reversal symmetry. And it gives you a fairly general, this is essentially what you can, if K is linear, that's RASPA. You can be nonlinear, you can have many. We're trying to make it a little general. Then you introduce the disorder, and let's introduce for the time being the easiest one, which is the delta scatterers. It's actually very interesting what Johnny Corey has done, introducing also spin-dependent scatterers, which is actually rather fundamental as well, which we should come and do it again. But here we do know how a recipe of how to introduce like the self-energy. You can actually calculate that term and introduce it generally. You end up with these gammas and gamma tilde, depending on the spin populations. Here, this is the basis of a spin up and a spin down. And this, once you have this self-energy, you can put it back into the Green's function to obtain the self-consistent Born approximation for the Green's function. This is just simply this expression. It's just a bunch of, at this moment, I'm sorry to introduce so many equations, but it's mostly aimed for the discussions that we're going to have in a minute. But once you introduce, this is actually the Green's function you're going to utilize in these lines in here to calculate the vertex corrections, okay? Which simply means that, okay, this vertex which appears in the bubble, in the one of the sides of the bubbles of to calculate the conductivity, is going to give you this vertex that Junicoro mentioned earlier, which is G alpha, which is the bare one, plus the corrections introduced by this type of diagrams, okay? Now here you can just write it out, this you can write it out directly, what it means from this point of view. This G tilde and G tilde, they're introduced because here this itself is the gamma itself as well in the self-consistent equation. And the nice thing to do in here that you need to do is to piece it apart in different terms, where this J tilde is going to be some sigma 0 plus sigma x, some term with sigma x, some term with sigma y, some term with sigma z. Okay, without making assumptions to begin with, one of the things that I think is missed often is the fact that you say, okay, I'm looking for a vertex that looks the same as my original vertex. It's actually not right because, as you will see in a second, there's an introduction of another anomalous velocities in other directions. Here, in order to do all this algebra, it's a lot of algebra, I'm afraid. There's actually some semi-public notes of mine that are floating around. If you like to know details, I'm willing to give them to anybody, where you actually have to use very liberally all these nasty trace expressions. But at the end of the day, here you end up with different terms that you can actually obtain for, say, the vertex in the JY. So yeah, this is the bare one. And then this is the one that Junicoro has calculated and introduced. Okay, you can actually obtain it. But there's another term, for example, JJYY, which is actually missed quite often, which is actually non-zero. The reason why it is not introduced sometimes in the actual limits, the calculations that have been done by Junicoro and actually Dugaev and others, are in the limit where the exchange splitting due to the ferromagnetic state is actually much larger than a spin orbit coupling splitting. And in that limit, this contribution does not contribute a lot. But it's actually important whenever you're in the opposite limit. So this may not be identical to the spin hall effect in that sense. And it's actually important in the graphene, for example, when we did the calculation. That's how we noticed it the most. But it's simply doing it. In that case, we're actually following this very similar things as Junicoro has done. The thing here that we're actually introducing, these vertex corrections are introduced in this type of terms of the conductivity. But this is not all, and this is now I understand why I had the wrong slide there. I'm going to skip real quick to this slide because I wanted to say something on the different terms. There you go. Okay, sorry about this, but it's important. So the general expression for the conductivity, this is the way that slide was out of place there, is this general expression. You have these contributions, sigma 1 and sigma 2. With sigma 1, the Nicurious expression is just really this GR times this VY times this GA. And there's another term that are products of retarded and retarded and advanced, which typically, in the weak scattering limit, are going to vanish. So those are usually not a problem. And then there's this sigma 2, which is actually the strata contribution, which actually can be shown to be equal to the derivative of the density of states at the Fermi energy with respect to an external magnetic field that only couples to the orbital degree of freedom. It's a big mouthful, but anyway, it is important to mention that is not really introduced into this vertex correction, that it is not really studied how much does it contribute. In most of the calculations, that this is something that we will have to be discussing this week, that I would like to discuss, because I myself don't understand it completely. Let me go back. How many seconds do I have? Hang on. And,
why do you mention this term if you have no external magnetic
field? I'm sorry?
Why do you mention this term? You don't have an external magnetic field.
Okay. This term can be non-zero, but it's actually evaluated as the derivative with respect to that magnetic field at zero magnetic field, and it can be non-zero. Okay, it's essentially how stiff the spectrum is with respect to a magnetic field that couples to the orbital degree of freedom, and that was the idea, and it was very successful. This is actually what it is in the contribution that it is in quantum Hall effect. It's Pavel's term. Where am I? Okay. Yeah. Okay, so essentially, you end up with some, long expressions. Actually, these are actually, after you do some algebra, it's also Juniperus expressions. They're a little more, I think they're exact than these expressions. And you can see, for example, terms, when you end up, this contribution, this in here is the vertex correction, you end up with something that looks like 1 plus A prime, where these are the A and A, actually, I didn't put the A prime there, I didn't have time, but all this, in the limit of both bands being occupied, in the RASPA system, this is only specialized for the RASPA, okay, doesn't happen for the graphene, they vanish, including that term. It's actually surprising, but it's maybe not surprising. But certainly when you're not in both bands being occupied, I don't see that it vanishes at all. I think that is actually not true in the spin Hall effect, because it's fairly general that it's zero. And this is some of the puzzles that I would also like to keep in mind to discuss this week. Okay, so I'm just making a to-do list here of what I would like to discuss. That's why, that things that I would like to understand farther. Okay, in some fun discussions. Yeah.
If you have just the RASPA 2, there could an electric current, but there's always the spin current which is polarized in plane, or no longer is equal.
So this one, I guess, these are just essentially this is the anomalous velocity. But there is another velocity.
There's 2-deck plus RASPA plus exchange, or not?
Plus exchange, of course.
Plus exchange.
Yeah. All this whole thing vanishes in the limit of zero exchange. Okay? It's linear. It's actually not linear with the exchange, but in a small exchange, it vanishes linearly, but it doesn't when the exchange is large.
So the relation between is it from this part and the strata?
This is not a strata. I haven't included a strata term here. This is only your term. Okay, here this is fully, and this one we should all at the end of the week definitely agree, because it's exactly the way you do the calculation and the way you think, just detail, a bunch of details, but we can get to know it. Actually, we've also been discussing with Dugay quite a bit as well, which have a slightly different results, and slightly different approach, because they use the time-ordered Green's functions, which is interesting of where these vertex corrections come in or not. So again, this will be some detailed discussion that anybody's welcome to attend, but that we will be into it. Okay, so let me just finish with a comment on this last argument for transport, just mainly to mention to Donna a little bit of what my understanding is. So maybe I'm wrong in here, and I'm not understanding it correctly. But this was an argument that was put forward by Donna Sheng and others to see whether this transport in the due to the spin over spin Hall effect or not, using the Laffman argument. Okay, and the Laffman argument goes as follows. Okay, you have a ribbon guy, with a magnetic, you know, some magnet, you know, a ribbon, and you put the flux through this, and then you increase the flux from zero to one flux quanta, and you create this electric field. And if you look at how the spectrum, so this is a bunch of a spectrum eigenstates, and the spectrum evolves as you increase the flux, this occupied left edge state, so this is, would be a state that corresponds to here, evolves this way up to here, and the one that was on the right evolves up to here without crossing, actually just crossing, essentially there's not an avoided crossing of these two guys, and that means that because now this one is below the Fermi energy and this one now is above the Fermi energy, they swap places. So you've actually, by creating that flux, you've annihilated one here and created one there, so you've transported them. Okay? That's the basic argument. But of course, you know, and these other guys in here, they just are localized states in the middle, which never really come into play because they hardly move whenever you introduce a flux. They shouldn't care whether there's a flux introduced or not. But this is an argument that has to be done in terms of the Zener tunneling. Okay, you cannot just make the argument, okay, the question is whether they cross or not. What is the probability of crossing or not? In the Zener tunneling, you introduce a perturbation that changes your eigenstate, the instantaneous eigenstate that you can calculate at a specific time. Okay, as you increase the time, this A and B, if you just follow this line and this dashed line, this is how this A would evolve and B will evolve, like a spin up or a spin down. And the question is, what's the probability of this guy's A ending up in A prime after you've turned on the impurity, the energy? If you increase the energy and that probability is proportional to this gap between them, this avoided crossing delta square, divided by the rate at which you are turning on as you're stuffing energy in the system. Okay. If you go very, very slowly, very, 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 very slowly, the delta is close to zero, the probability is zero, and you'll just come back. You just essentially be adiabatic. You just go A, and then end up coming here, and you'll never have pumped it up enough or turned it off fast enough to go to the other side. If you do it, and the question is, in a normal system, what is dEdt? How fast do you pump the energy in once you introduce an electric field in that way of introducing the flux? Well, dEdt, this is the energy dt, you can split it between dEdk, dk dt, which will be the velocity at the Fermi energy, times the dk dt, which is going to be the electric field, times the charge divided by its bar. So you can put that back into these expressions, and you ask, the question is whether this exponent to the minus pi, well, whatever the pi, is delta square over the electric field, is much less than 1 or not. Because if it's much less than 1, you're going to have a crossing. A is going to go to A prime and B is going to go to B prime, as it was argued in this picture, that this guy will go here and this guy would go here when you turn on the flux. Okay? They wouldn't go like this. Okay? Now the question is, why does this work in the quantum Hall effect? And the quantum Hall effect works very well because this delta, essentially, the coupling between the left edge and the right edge, okay, this avoided crossing, is exponentially small, minus L over L, where L is the magnetic length. So this will always be, for any magnetic field in the large L limit, this is going to be much less than 1. You're always going to have a crossing, not an anti-crossing. For a metal, it's the same argument. Delta, in this case, is going to be proportional to 1 over LD, okay, the density of states. And as you make it larger and larger, this delta becomes smaller and smaller. And you also have, for any, in the thermodynamic limit, you have always a crossing, which of course, you do have a metal, so you better have transport. So that's why I'm puzzled by why this argument is being utilized in this. The argument was, well, for a finite system, we see these avoided crossings, therefore there's no transport. Well, in the thermodynamic limit, as far as I understand, and this is my understanding only, you cannot use that argument, but maybe, I'm very happy to be convinced otherwise. So I guess I'm over 3 minutes, so I'll stop there. Okay, and just my collaborators there. These are all very fancy questions, so I'll start with those. I'll thank my collaborators, Thomas Youngworth, who is just arrived with me, Alan McDonald, Jörg Wunderlich, Branislav Nikolic, a very nice guy, that is an expert on mesoscopic systems in Delaware. Marco Polini, who's a lot besides eating, is also a very not good expert in electron gases. Lawrence Mollenkamp, Kentaro Nomura, Evelina, who's been here for quite a while, and some of you may have gotten to know her. My student Mario Borunda, Nikolai Sinitsyn, who actually has done quite a few of these calculations, mainly in the graphene and the anomalous Hall effect. Carson Tim, who just arrived as well. Shen Niu, Shunqing Shen, which is in Hong Kong, and Liu Sarp. Okay, thank you for your time. All right. So there's lots of probably questions that we can talk later, I think.
I have a simple question.
Yeah.
I didn't understand your argument of avoiding border crossing in the last part, but I didn't quite get what that argument was originally meant for.
Well, it was meant, you see, the argument of Laughlin was actually not, I don't think it was complete when he wrote the paper. He said, well, you know, this guy goes here, that guy goes here, so therefore we've got transport. You've taken one electron from this side and put it in that side.
But you don't. I mean, you just change the energy. You end up with some non-Fermi distribution.
Right, but his argument was, you know, because it's now below the Fermi energy, this is for the non-interacting electron gas, okay? This was for the quantum integer quantum Hall effect. As I say, how I understand this, so I'll be willing to be told otherwise. This is the way I view it, that, you know, now it's below, therefore you have this switch of. But the key thing is whether you do have a crossing or anti-crossing, that you do agree, right?
I don't understand the argument, I guess, in the quantum Hall context. What's the relevance for?
Because, you know, if you utilize this argument for a metal, okay, and you ask yourself, is there crossing or anti-crossing? In the thermodynamic limit, there will always be crossing, not anti-crossing. Because this delta in here goes to zero, you ask yourself, what is the electric field that I need in order to have a crossing or anti-crossing? And the electric field has to be lower than zero, so that cannot be. So that's why I'm saying that it's not applicable. You do have to be wondering what this, you know, you have to show that this is the case. And that's my understanding. I mean, that's so, but and you can address it.
So for the metal, my understanding is you have many levels. So there is no simple causing. Instead, you have scattering between many levels.
Okay.
So you need to transform, but that transform has a lot to do with the disorder scattering, which mixes levels.
Okay.
So in that sense, the transfer is still different from dissipation, like adiabatic transfer. So our argument is only for the metal, there is no adiabatic transfer, but you can have something happen at the thin surface.
Okay.
Which has something due to the level mixing.
Okay, I still have to digest that comment, but I think so you do agree that there's no adiabatic. Essentially, this is saying, no. This argument is saying that there's no adiabatic way to turn on the electric field in the metal. I mean, at least, but anyway, but okay. Any, yes. Actually, we studied the anomalous Hall effect itself. We wanted to stay up. The argument that there is because the spin in this case, as I showed us, the two bands decoupled. So spin being conserved is a little nice example where you can have a spin Hall effect, I think. But the calculation itself that I was wanted to show there was essentially this result, which I, of course, took it out. Excellent. Okay, that was the other slide that went in the wrong space. Hang on. There. Okay. This result is for this anomalous Hall effect, not the spin Hall effect, but only for the K band. Being on the opposite band, you actually have that naturally. The K prime gives you the opposite contribution, so it gives you spin Hall effect itself. Again, the argument graphene is not ferromagnetic, as far as I know yet. So we would have to think of some sort of proximity effect experiment to introduce this exchange coupling. The delta in this case is introduced from the spin-orbit coupling. There's an argument of whether this is actually large or small from Keynes, that this delta is actually the want, the distinguishing between A and B.
What are you talking about? We're spinning here.
It's actually not a spin. This is pseudo spin because we're actually in the K band itself. You know, there's not. This is actually the sigma x and sigma y for the different. It corresponds to different sides A and B. Okay. Actually, a normal Hall effect. I haven't talked about spin Hall effect. But there, you can argue yourself. Okay, what is the off diagonal response?
What does it mean that you are going to have anomalous Hall effect? Because if you distinguish sublattices, you don't introduce any time with irreversible disorder. So there's nothing magnetic in it.
There's nothing magnetic, so there's an exchange interactions that we introduce.
Exchange with what? Between what and what?
Let me see, hang on for a second. Let me go back.
What I'm saying that
if
you're on the board, are polymatrices in the sublattice space. Whatever you do in sublattice space is non-magnetic.
It is not magnetic, and
it is just geometry.
It is just geometry, probably. Hang on. I'm still with jet lag. Delta zero. Okay, so delta zero in this case. This one is actually the magnetic, I think. Okay, hang on.
What is written?
Okay, this one here is actually introduced as an exchange coupling. Go ahead.
What's written on this board is the following. Instead of studying graphene, you study another material which has L and B sides made of different atoms. In this term, which is written on the board, opens a gap.
The delta is zero.
There is no magnetism here whatsoever.
Delta is zero, sigma c. If they were real spins, they would be introduced in that, right?
This is not real spins. This is sublattice
synthesis. In this case, sublattice synthesis.
Well, if you introduce the real exchange here,
hang on a second. Delta is zero, sigma 1 plus sigma 2. This one would give. Okay.
If you apply time inversion.
No, I understand what you're saying. If you introduce, you know, the K and K prime bind, if you put them both together, there will not be time reversal in that case. Because the delta is of the sigma z would be a minus in that other band. But if you focus on one of the bands alone and say that you consider that.
The order is going to write down the term to preserve time inversion symmetry to write down the form. The format is with both the general conclusion. You can do that, but if time is reversible, time is a new space for another form.
Well, in this case, the. But each of the similar. Okay. No, I dislike. I mean, if you do introduce a magnetic field, okay, or an exchange field in the real spins, okay, then that's going to essentially split the contribution. There's an equivalent and opposite contribution from the spin down, right? There's a spin orbit coupling there, but there's an exchange field. There is not. I mean, in the ones that you actually have, there is not. These would have to be produced through some proximity effect to some sort where the orbital degree of freedom is not as strong as the exchange field or the Zeeman term. Essentially, a Zeeman term. That's what we're looking for. A strong Zeeman term. So. With this delta I saw in this case is actually not it's not really you would have to make it different from the different bands K and K prime as far as I understand but in order to observe the sigma xy and the non-vanishing one but in this calculation because K and K prime decouple you can do the calculation for one of the bands itself and then add the two contributions. The thing that I just wanted to mention beyond whether that, you know, just look at that Hamiltonian itself, okay, beyond whether it applies to graphene or not, which may or may not, we can argue at that point. Because of the band structure being so simple, you actually can make this calculation. This is the full calculation of Kubo, but actually you can obtain the same thing with this semi-classical formulation. This is actually Boltzmann equation generalized with now this side jump being a gauge invariant, and you're actually able to obtain the exact same result. That nasty expression that you saw, you're able to obtain it through this other method, which is, as far as I know, the first time it can be done. Just in this case, just take it to be an example Hamiltonian. We actually introduce that term and be able to calculate it, whether it's applicable to graphene or not.
In other words, it's now, for this case, it's proved that it is a pure Fermi surface property. So you don't need any bulk states.
You don't, know, but actually that I also, yeah, I mean, that I always think is a matter of how you view it. You know, you can always write the formulas itself. This is linear response, actually, so this formula. This is all of it evaluated at the Fermi surface. And it's general, very general.
But the second one is not, the first one is really Fermi surface formula.
Right, this one actually, but you can actually...
This one can also be transformed
as a derivative at the Fermi surface of how the density of states at the Fermi surface varies by that magnetic field. So in that sense, it's very much also a Fermi surface thing. You do know about the stiffness of your whole system, but okay, fine, you know, what do you call it? Okay, so it's not... Right, I mean, here what we're doing is just taking the graphene Hamiltonian for one of the K points and calculate the diagonal response, off-diagonal response. Okay, hang on, where the heck is it going? Okay, sorry, I missed placed it, but somewhere, there. Okay, so we're just taking this Hamiltonian and just calculate sigma xy in the same fashion with those two terms. Okay. Yeah?
I'm not familiar with the spurious scattering term, but is it possible regarding that there is a kind of bad expression for you?
Okay, so here's the thing that I didn't want to say, but I'm going to say
it. Regarding the derivative of the green function with respect to Morgan term or something.
The skew scattering term?
Using the log identity. Regarding that part, the kind of bad expression.
Yeah.
In
terms of a Berry's face, you mean?
And we can use a bad identity for realize the bad expression with the green function.
Well, typically the word identity that the one you mentioned is actually used for the one that contains the product of retarded and advanced Green's, not retarded and retarded and advanced Green's functions, which introduces a renormalization of the mass. But I don't understand your argument. The other one does not. Well, what identity can be applied to this for any system because it's exact result? I mean,
so you can do that for the skew scattering.
For the skew scattering term. I mean, I don't think you can piece apart things in a word identity, you know. But let me mention one thing about skew scattering. This term, the side jump, that term, skew scattering, that term actually is also intrinsic in a sense. So this is an example where you actually have intrinsic skew scattering. Sorry to say. So it adds to the puzzle as well. This alkali just shows that these things are complicated and fun to work on. Okay? I've already taken way past my time. I'm sorry, Adonna. You better get on here.
She was kind enough to come only today, and in the name of the coordinators, I would like to thank her for that.
Yeah, I want to thank the organizers for giving me the chance to give a talk. Last semester was too busy. So I won't give like a brief review. I just going directly talk about our recent work. Because a lot of progress in this field, I really need time to catch up. I couldn't progress with my computer. Yes. Is that the one?
Yeah.
Oh, However, for that system, it may be difficult to realize that the quantized spin four effect. So at the end of my talk, I also want to talk about how to use the magnetic field to realize such a topological quantized spin four effect. So that model is very simple. You have a spin coupled 2D system. Before you turn on this Rochebach spin orbital coupling, you have two components. One carries some positive very phase, the other carries negative very phase. The point that we want to make is when you couple such systems together, you do not get a previous state. And topologically, that state needs a 2x2 chain number matrix to describe. Then I will show you the above chain number for that being orbital coupled damping insulator. And I also want to show you the connection between the above chain number, H-state spin polarization and the spin pump. And at the end of my talk, I also want to discuss the role played by time reversal symmetry and also some other issues related to topological instability of the system with age. So that is the Hamilton-Nadis model for the graphene. And we can write the model in corresponding form. You have a newly labeled Hartington, that is the largest one. Then, when we also realize that the intrinsic spin orbital coupling between the newly, the Hartington between the newly labeled side, that one conserves the spin, but that term has a phase, such a Hartington has a phase, and that phase depends on electron spin. So that's it's like a magnetic flux for the positive flux for spin up and the negative flux for spin down. So could I use that model to, without spin, to show the individual quantum Hall effect without magnetic field? So in the recent work by Ken and Mir, they generalized that model to present form with intensive inverter coupling and also rush bar coupling to show the possible realization of the quantum control effect. So we also did some numeric calculation with the rush bar term and the disorder to show the non-trivial transport and also topological property of the system. So that is our starting point, where you can say before you turn on the rush bar coupling, the spin up is in the magnetic field which is pointing up, and the spin down is in the field which is pointing down. So that system can be characterized by a Chern number. So spin up has a Chern number 1 and spin down has a Chern number negative 1. And the main point is once you have rush bar term coupling those two spin components, if that system is topologically trivial or not. So first I want to show the results from the LB formula calculation. So that calculation has the full meter. So that's why it's the sensitive state. Without rush bar coupling, due to the intrinsic spin orbital coupling, there is the energy gap. So you have one energy band, which is field, and another band is empty, and in between there is a gap. And that is the four terminals in core conductance. It's your new quantized value, and that value will be affected by rush bar coupling. But inside that region, or region here and here, in the band gap, the spin Hall conductance remains robust until the rush bar coupling mixing the two bands together. So that's like the phase transition point where the spin Hall conductance start to drop. And the first diagram shows the effect of disorder. So that's ethics, the disorder strength. So when you increase disorder strength, it does not change the spin Hall conductance much. It's reduced from quantized value to somewhere very close to quantized value. So the unit for this Hall conductance we use is e over 4 pi. So over here it's about 4 times e over 4 pi. And this is the calculation show if we use like there is a spin Hall conductance for this graphene system if we have intrinsic spin orbital coupling and the rush bar coupling. This is a direct cube formula calculation. It also shows that inside energy gap, you have this newly quantized spin Hall conductance. So it's, we can also define a topological number. It turns out to as quantized, new quantized spin Hall conductance is only robust in the region you have non-zero Chern number. So let me first give a very brief review of Chern number. So Chern number is I show you that one. So Chern number is related to Bailey phase. So that's the Chern number is formulated in some planetary space. Theta is the boundary condition. When you put the electron system in a 2D plane and you solve a finite size system, you want to add the boundary phase. So that's where you can get the number as an integral invariant of the phase space. And for the infinite quantum hole, in fact, electron occupy those number levels, then the two numbers is a very useful quantity because it distinguishes extended state from localized state. And also, if that infinite quantization of course doesn't, it's due to the total chain number of all those extended states in each number level, have a total chain number equals 1. And so that's the chain number for integer quantum Hall effect. And the chain number also equals the Hall conductance, total chain number also equals the Hall conductance of the system in units of t squared over h. That's the number, it's a manifold the number, in the sense that you consider the function of all the electrons below Fermi energy. Without interacting, the chain number also equals the chain number for a single particle. So that's, we can also calculate chain number for interacting system with the disorder, because we did that kind of calculation for several electrons. The interesting part is for co-fractional quantum Hall effect, when we calculate chain number, we can predict what is the mobility gap and compare it with the experimental measures, activation gap. So because it's a topological quantity, it's more reliable when we look at its property at a smaller size. So for the usual charged quantum Hall effect, we only need a chain number of the system. However, when we consider the transport of a bilinear system, there are several quantum transport coefficients. So if we want to write down the linear response of current as a function of voltage, you have 2 by 2 for conductance. Like sigma 1 means you just add the voltage in one layer and you measure current in one layer. Result with the voltage in second layer equals zero. So we have this four component for the Hall conductance. It's very similar to that. Chain number for bilinear system also has four independent components. So that's, we can also understand that the four independent components in terms of phase space, because when we solve the quantum mechanical problem for two layers, for each layer you can add two boundary phase. You can say what is the boundary phase when you translate the function from one edge to another edge. You can add a boundary phase along the x direction to the second layer. You can also add a boundary phase for the translation along y direction to the second layer. You can also add the independent boundary phase for the top layer, so we have four boundary phase extensions. So then when we define the chain number, we can have the diagonal one, which means you change those two boundary phase and you set other boundary phase to be constant, like a periodical one. So that's when you get the diagonal chain number. And you can also add a boundary phase in the x direction in the second layer and add a boundary phase in the y direction on the top layer, which in a way is similar. You only just add the voltage in one layer and you measure the transport current in another layer. That gives us the off-diagonal chain number. So we can define those four independent chain numbers And actually, speech number was used before for the important fact in Jewish culture. But in that case, central number is defined for the third boundary phase, thinking. So that means for different spin components, you always add the upper boundary phase. That means it's a response in the spin channel. But the spin Hall effect we are talking about today is a little bit different. It's a transfer in the mixing channel. That means you actually add the common boundary condition into first layer or first spin, and then you add the spin tensor into first spin component in a y dimension, then you get a true number, which is not zero for that graphene model with the intrinsic simple effect. In other words, that true number equals the difference between those two diagonal components. And that's the magic plot just trying to show for that model, below the Fermi energy, you have spin up initially carry positive number, spin down carry negative number. The Drashba coupling is going to mix in those two components together. However, they cannot destroy each other's chain number because they have different color. Or in other words, once we define the chain number, as long as that gap is not closing, the integral remains to be unchanged. And those features of those integrals remain unchanged. So Drashba coupling will not change that number to that number. But there is an issue about once you have Drashba coupling, how do you add the boundary phase? Spin up and spin, consider spin up and spin down different boundary phase. So the issue is when you have a particle, it's moving from it's spin up, and the moving cause the boundary becomes spin down. What phase we should add? So that phase, that's like you need to take a convention. So we take the same phase as if that is a spin down, move cause boundary. But we can also do the opposite. Let's take the phase as if it didn't really stay at spin up. So there are several different conventions that is very similar to when you do cube formula calculation. You cannot really have a good definition for the spin current. However, the whole point is your Hamiltonian has a term depend on Drashba coupling and also depends on the boundary phase. No matter how you change that convention for adding the boundary phase, on the torus it turns out to be a perturbation. It won't close in that gap. It won't close that gap. So we did that calculation for the graphene model with the intrinsic spin orbital coupling and the Drashba coupling. So that is that basically is the boundary phase because the true number is the integral over the boundary phase. So we divide the parameter space into a small mesh like that one. So we calculate the function on those nodes. Then we calculate this function overlap on this node. That's where we define the boundary phase. So right issue of just the small plate. So at a weak Drashba coupling, the boundary phase is more or less uniformly carried by, is uniformly distributed in a phase space. However, as we increase the Drashba coupling, the two energy bands start to touch each other, then the very face shows those very strong peak structure. It looks like it carry high, each of those peaks carry a very big high over two. So the quantum phase transition is through the touching of the two energy bands. Then the outfit number from different bands can destroy each other. Then we have a transition to a trivial phase. That's the calculation for the bulk. We put system on the torus. And the chain number is very actually similar to the cube formula calculation. And that's also applied to the model if you initially put the if you put the uncoupled spin and a higher quantum force, so then you get a higher topological chain number and also higher spin Hall conductance. However, when we consider open system, there are different issues that emerge. So the issue is if you have the one-to-one correspondence between the bulk chain number and the H state, and also if the H state is stable. It turns out there are some conditions for this gauge state to be stable, even for topological quantized in four systems. So in that case, we did the calculation by using that geometry, then we use closed system on X direction and open system on Y direction. And we deductively adding the flux to the system that is equivalent to generalize the boundary phase on the X direction. So in that case, we are not, that phase is the common phase for spin up and the spin down. And also the common phase for Drashba term. When we consider closed system, there is an energy gap. But once we consider the system with H, there are many states inside the energy gap, and we examine the wave function of all those states, and all of those states are H states in the sense that they have zero density state in the bulk and they live at very close to the H. So that axis is the boundary phase or the flux we add into the system. And that perpendicular axis to the energy of each of those eight states. So without flux at a zero boundary condition, you get those states. With the increase of flux and those states, its energy will evolve with the flux. And those energy levels are simply causing each other. That's the there are several points there. Actually, there are several points those energy levels causing each other. So in each of those regions, we did calculation for like a thousand more for the different flux to see for levels really causing each other.
In this case, one can theoretically one can know for sure they do causing because either they are at same size and they have the same either they are same.
Here they are moving in an opposite direction. However, at that point, wherever you have state, because of Cramer degeneracy, they must have to stay together.
So in that sense, that level causing is also related to the time's reversal symmetry of the system. With increasing
or Drashba carbon, one can have a quantum phase transition. And transition, after quantum phase transition, the energy, the band gap is still with bulk state and you do not have any H state.
And also, I forgot to mention one point. So there are those eight states. If there is no flux, all those eight states are doubly degeneracy. Once you turn on very small flux, those eight states are highly being polarized. Some states polarized, the direction kind of non-positive radiation, the other is about 90% polarized in the vacuum radiation. So the level causing also causing transfer for eight states, as Heisard mentioned before. So in this case, we have this robust dissipativeness transfer from eight states. One issue is that the intrinsic spin orbital coupling is very small, so it may be very difficult to realize that system in a present sample, because there is always some disorder in the system, and also the size of the system is not really that large. So there is a lot of way of realizing that quantum spin quantum size, which is using the same graphene sample, however, also uses Strelmann into the field. So that diagram shows that numeric calculation for the, and let's say, half integer quantized, integer quantum for effect. So that is the calculation with magnetic field. It's every quantum force like 2 of course is immediately quantized. But because in those central number level, you have degeneracy of 4, so those are quantized at negative 2 and positive 2 and positive 6. So some people call it half integer quantized. So that is integer quantum force system for conductance for both spin systems. If we consider the weak Schwarzschild coupling, because Schwarzschild coupling is really weak, so then you have spin down systems. We have those quantized integer force effect from negative 1, positive 1, positive 3. You take all those odd integers. And you also have spin up system, which also can realize those different quantum force like force. With the Riemann splitting, then you can have spin energy in a region where spin up is have a negative 1 plus 4, and spin down has a positive 1 plus 4. So then those two states will carry a quantized spin four effect for the quantize the spin core effect. So I think that is easier to realize experimentally. And the issue of stability, we can understand that integer topological spin effect is not equivalent to integer quantum Hoare effect. We can understand this point by mapping the topological spin Hoare effect model to really an integer quantum Hoare effect system. So that mapping can be done by you just take different coordinate system for the spin up and the spin down. So it's just like you use the conventional x axis for spin up, and you use negative axis for the spin down as the real x axis. Well, so there is the mixing of parity. So once you do that, that topological spin core effect model is definitely mapping to integer quantum core effect model. However, the Schwarzschild term, if we write it as a tight standing form, initially it's a local coupling. Once you do the mapping, the Schwarzschild term becomes a non-linear coupling. It can couple states from different age. For that reason, when we have a system with age, the Schwarzschild term may cause the system to be instable. But for For the particular system we discussed before, because of time they were so invariant, you can have level counting. But once we break that time reversal invariant to Riemann term, then those eight states will open a gap. Such that the transfer with H usually is not the same as transfer or cube formula calculation we obtain use Torus. So let me summarize my talk. We talk about the topological simple effect of the spin-coupled 2D system. Two spin components carry arbitrary number, but when you couple them, you do not get always get a trivial state. One needs to use a chain number matrix to describe to classify the topological property of the system. And there is a bulk spin chain number, and that bulk spin chain number has 1-to-1 correspondence with the edge conducting channel. And those edge conducting channels usually can conduct spin polarized currents. And the time reversal symmetry protects those edge states. Without time reversal symmetry, there will be a gap open in the edge channel, such that at zero temperature, the transfer could be quite different from the integer quantum Hoare system. Yeah, I'll finish here. Thank you.
Can I ask a question about
that?
So that this, you were calling it before, spin charge, churn number, and you can characterize the quantum spin all state. A priori, it can take any integer value in a non-interacting system.
Yeah.
Whereas this Kane-Mallet story is that you should be using rather a parity or D2 or D.
Yeah.
And it seems that the edge states at least are somehow is only an odd even effect if you have multiple pairs of edge states are not stable.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
how
do I reconcile these two? If I have two pigeonhole insulators that are, whatever, one pigeonhole insulator that have different, have the same V2 index but different churn number, are they different?
The only part of that topological index is conserved is whether it's odd or even in general being there.
So for the even for the Kern and the Mills paper, they are trying to connect the Z2 invariant with the spin current in the A.
Yeah.
So that's I think that's the Z2 cannot tell you the direction of current, because Z2 tells you the spin current, so any direction that can smoothly connect with each other. So in that sense, I think Z2 cannot do a complete description for the spin Hoare system. If you do think they are those spin polarized currents. However, the instability of topological spin Hoare system is there, and it seems captured by these two descriptions. The only that the odd number of chain number. Actually, odd number for chain number is also
not necessarily stable. It's just that they can have at least one edge space which conducts dissipationless current. On the other hand, if we do not go to zero temperature, then the number tells you the number of edge space, then also tells you conductance at maybe finite temperature. Is that right? If you have the same space.
I'm worrying more about the fundamental question, right?
Yeah.
I don't understand what your statement is. I mean, if I, even forgetting about any of the...
Knowing, first of all, knowing even how many instruments there are doesn't tell you how much spin current is transported by each node. Yeah. If you're just wondering why is the topological classification in terms of ZQ rather than in terms of just Z, if you look at classifications of wave functions and ports, so this is some body bundle of wave functions for each point in K and ports, and require that there's an involution of 3 to 4, which is converse, and t squared fermions is minus 1, so q to the fourth is 1, and you must literally allow a topological number service, then you get that it's z2 rather than z. Either kind is very intuitive. There's quick to the same note that we're trying to sort of move nodes around, and by changing this index, we're changing the integer index by 2, which doesn't change the parity. But in Bohm, I don't think there's any really simple argument.
How does this integer suddenly change from...
Right, so if you have a guess, how can you change? I think Duncan was working on the two, and he couldn't find a way to change those index. By initially he definitely think it's a V2, but he couldn't really pick up how the integer number can change if that system is under polar.
So an actual picture of how this process happens in the Kane and Miller paper, it would require a change by a factor of 2 is informed of any spectrum.
Right, but if you have energy gap, you cannot do it.
So this is the deformation is.
Can you change? You know.
And you certainly can't change it by an odd integer.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I don't know if I can get it out.